We simply can't budget money for things that are theoretical.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Delray Beach, Florida.
Sunny Delray Beach, Florida?
Sunny, listen, sunny delight. It's perfect. Well, no, it's not perfect.
Not perfect?
There was a cloud yesterday while I was listening on the beach, listening to my Menudo 8-track, and there was a cloud that lasted for about 15 seconds, so I did some cursing, but then it went away.
That cloud was identified, of course, by the local authorities and immediately eliminated.
Well, that cloud actually was Kent Conrad.
Ah, Kent Conrad. And that is, of course, why we had a little bit of Kent Conrad at the top of the show. He was perhaps the single most newsworthy senator this particular week.
We love you, Conrad! Oh, yes, we do! We love you, Conrad! And we'll be true!
Well, he's chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, of course, and he's dealing with President Obama's suggested budget, and I do mean suggested.
It's only suggested, and Congress does with it as they please. And, of course, we've been hearing it described most usually as President Obama's $3.6 trillion budget for the
federal
government.
Is this a good time to mention that the fact that NPR is hurting and desperately needs help infusion in member stations, or do we not do that in the podcast?
We do that in the podcast because even though the podcast goes out through
free.
The miracle of the internet and free,
right.
We do need to ask people to support their local station, their NPR station, wherever they live. That having been done,
Kent Conrad,
we love you, Conrad,
in the news not only because of the rising Red River, but also because of the rising tide of federal debt, which he's trying to stem by trimming at the edges of President Barack Obama's record-setting $3.6 trillion.
And I wonder, you know, you talk about President Obama talking about the impediments to his budget, and I wonder if Democrats might be more of an obstacle than Republicans in
some
way.
Not more than. I mean, that's provocative. I mean, the fact of the matter is that he will get support from virtually all the Democrats,
right.
And some kind of adjustment being made. For example, in the House, late on Wednesday night of this week, they approved a budget version, a sort of first draft of their version of the Barack Obama budget, and they tinkered around the edges a certain amount, and then they passed it on a straight party line vote with all the Democrats on one side, all the Republicans on the other.
But
I think it's still a partisan issue.
But I'm saying if Republicans complain, well, they will complain, and we saw in the economic stimulus package that hardly any Republicans at all voted for that. My point is that when Democrats do express objections, be it Ken Conrad, be it the new moderate conservative bloc led by Evan Bayh, whatever it is, they're more likely to be heard than Republican opposition.
That's right, because they make a better story. So in terms of the media, you and I, everyone else who shares our profession, is going to be out there saying, oh, look at that Democrat who's actually saying something negative about the Obama program. Something though, I do want to mention about this week is that we have seen a blur of a president this week. Even as the House Budget Committee was voting at midweek, late at night, on this budget resolution or this draft of the budget, Barack Obama was attending his second nocturnal fundraiser of that particular night, having spent the day up on the Hill talking to Democrats in person, coming to the Hill, hat in hand, try to get their support, and then having made an unannounced quick trip over to Arlington Cemetery, where he participated in a wreath laying on Presidential Medal of Honor Award Winners Day.
That was very touching, by the way.
And it was quite a ceremony. And then he was over to this event and over to that event and off to more fundraisers. And all of that he did in that one day was after having held a late-night news conference the night before, in which he took a solid hour's worth of questions and gave what sounded like a college professor's lecture in answer to every one of those questions.
But you notice who he didn't speak to. I mean, he did speak to somebody from the Washington Times. He spoke to somebody from Ebony Magazine,
Stars and Stripes.
Mm-hmm. But no New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal.
USA Today.
Los Angeles Times.
None of the frontline newspapers that all take themselves
Nobody
very
from
seriously.
It's All Politics.
No.
But you know something? He had a comment at the press conference, which kind of got me a little unnerved. He said something like, I like to know what I'm talking about before I speak. Now, who thinks like that?
I think it was actually a rather interesting moment when he said that, because he was a little bit pinioned. It was maybe the one moment in the entire press conference where somebody really kind of had him. Why?
This is Ed Henry of CNN.
Yes, and he was doing his follow-up question on a question he had already asked about the AIG bonuses. And he essentially was saying, why has Andrew Cuomo gotten more action towards recovering some of these millions paid to AIG executives in bonuses than you have, Mr. President? And why did it take you so long after you must have learned about these awful bonuses at that awful company? Why did it take you so long to speak up? And it looked like they had him. And then he says, because I like to know what I'm talking about before I speak.
Well, obviously, he's never heard the podcast.
Well, this is the way that a good duck and weave artist slips the punch. He does it pretty well. The last guy I saw do it this well was Ronald Reagan.
One of the reasons I suspect he held this press conference was because of the mounting anger over the AIG bonuses. And it was interesting when Obama said at one point that he said, you know, I'm angry as anybody else at the bonuses. And he said it in such a monotone that if that's what anger is.
Yes, yeah, it was sort of a Mike Dukakis rage.
Exactly right. I mean, if that's the outrage you hear from the President of the United States when the whole country is really somewhat outraged, I'm as angry as anybody about the bonuses.
I'm as angry as anyone. But then, let's face it, the whole AIG thing of last week, which was such a firestorm, has subsided to a large degree. Cuomo got back the money from 15 of the executives, and even though it's less than a third of the total amount of money, the story energy is running in the other direction. The Senate has put off any consideration of this 90% punitive tax on those bonuses until the end of next month. We don't really think the Senate is ever going to pass this.
And there was not even a question at the press conference about that. Mr. President, do you support the House action about the 90%? That question never even came up.
That's why he didn't call on you, Ken.
Well, exactly, because I was on the beach. So I think one of the reasons maybe President Obama has accomplished what he wanted to, express the outrage, have the House go through their motions of passing this 90% tax, and then letting it just disappear and letting it dissipate.
Slip the punch.
Yep, yep.
One more time. The reason Obama's doing all this, of course, is because he's trying to put a certain amount of political pressure on Congress to carry through his program, to vote on his budget in the way he wants, and to support him as he goes after all of these different issues at once.
And it may be simplistic to say that what happens next Tuesday in New York 20th Congressional District, which is upstate New York, the seat that Kirsten Gillibrand gave up when she was appointed to the Senate, I mean, that's been rewritten by everybody, nearly everybody, as a referendum on President Obama and the future of American democracy and the stimulus package and everything.
You know, that's one that he's probably going to lose, in my opinion. I'm just going to throw this out there. But, you know, Scott Murphy is a candidate who, to a large degree, came out of nowhere. He's never run for anything before. He was double-digit points behind when he first got into the race. And while the Democratic Party is pouring a lot of money into this and a lot of people are trying to make it into a referendum on Barack Obama, Jim Tedesco, the Republican candidate, is the Republican leader in the state assembly. He is a well-established political figure, and this is a district that has an actual Republican plurality in its registered voters.
Of 70,000 more Republicans, exactly.
That's very large.
I think, Ron, what you're doing is you're doing the Democrats' work for them, because basically what you're saying, and I'm talking tongue-in-cheek, of course, but if the Republicans win, they could say, well, they should have won. It's a Republican district. Until Gillibrand won in 2006, it was a Republican district for 30 years. They should win it. But if the Democrats should win it, then, oh, my goodness, the Republicans are in big trouble. And actually, as I said that with mock exaggeration, I think what I just said is true. If the Democrats do win it, it will be an incredible thing. Republicans need it far more than Democrats do. They've been down and out. They only have 3 of the 29 New York congressional seats. They've really been wiped up, and they want to make the case that there's an outrage against this unprecedented debt. And what better way to do it than have Jim Tedesco win in New York 20?
Another race that everybody's talking about this week doesn't take place next Tuesday. It doesn't even take place this year. It's a primary that we're all anticipating that doesn't happen until 2010.
I assume we're talking about Arlen Specter in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
Who looks like he's going to be challenged for the second consecutive time by Pat Toomey, who was then a Republican congressman. Now he's the chairman of the Club for Growth,
which is a conservative group which challenges Republicans who are not sufficiently conservative, especially on economic issues, in primaries.
Now, 5 years ago, Specter barely beat Toomey, I think, by 14,000 votes. And
wow.
Specter back then had the support of President Bush and Senator Rick Santorum.
When President Bush was still quite popular,
right,
especially in Republican circles in Pennsylvania, and when Rick Santorum was the very popular other senator, Republican from Pennsylvania.
And a lot has changed. Well, actually, I was about to say a lot has changed since then. One thing that has not changed is that Arlen Specter has still continued to infuriate Republicans, and he did so by being one of the 3 senators to vote for the stimulus package. And that's one of the reasons that Toomey said, look, I'm getting in this race. This is, he does not represent Republican principles.
Now, there's some chance that Arlen Specter felt that by announcing this week he was going to vote against the key piece of labor legislation in this Congress.
The Employee Free Choice Act.
Also known as card check, also known as all kinds of unprintable things if you're talking to the Chamber of Commerce. This was an item where Arlen Specter was on the fence because he likes to appeal to union labor and certainly to non-union labor in Pennsylvania. And he was suggesting that maybe he could, his vote might be in question about this particular piece of legislation. But this week he came out and said he's definitely
against. 2 years ago, he was the only Republican to back it. And, of course, everybody was waiting to see what he would do. And when he announced that he would vote against Karchek, Toomey said, well, of course, you know, he obviously feels the pressure. I don't really think that Arlen Specter, I mean, I could be wrong on this, but I don't really think Arlen Specter votes because of what's going to happen in the primaries. He seems to be doing it. He sets his own course, and he does, you know, damn the torpedoes.
Well, then why did he turn around on Karchek?
Well, because I kind of think that there's a lot of problems with it. You notice that when it was first proposed by Ted Kennedy, they had far more signatories than it did when Tom Harkin offered it. So I think this is far less popular. And a lot of Democrats are complaining about it. Mary Landrieu, other Democrats saying, wait a second, I'm not sure about this. So I suspect
Blanche Lincoln from Arkansas.
Blanche Lincoln, right?
So it may not have 60 votes, even if it had Arlen Specter. And so maybe he's thinking now, look, this is a sinking ship. It's a good time to get off of it. Plus, it can also reinforce my credibility with conservatives in my home state before this primary.
But if you don't know, there was a Quinnipiac poll this week. And again, it's just very interesting to see that among Democrats, Arlen Specter has a tremendous approval rating, like 60 to 17 or something like that, but he's trailing. The last poll I saw, Toomey was up by 14 points in
Maybe
the poll.
Maybe Arlen Specter ought to think about running as an independent.
Well, or a Democrat.
Well, he might have a better shot as a Democrat than he's going to have as a Republican against Pat Toomey. I think Pat Toomey is going to be very strong in 2010 because Arlen Specter can't possibly get to Toomey's right. And even with all of his seniority, I think conservatives in Pennsylvania would rather go down with Pat Toomey than go down with Arlen Specter in November 2010.
The good news for Specter is that there's another person in the race, Peg Luksic, who is an anti-abortion activist. She got several hundred thousand votes the last time she ran for governor. Some people think that she could help split the vote. But if I were a betting person, and I'm really not, I'm more of a mattress and a box springs, not a betting, but I would say that Specter loses the primary.
Okay, so wouldn't it be smart for him to pull a Lieberman at this point and just run as an independent? I mean, because as I understand it in Pennsylvania, you can't run in a primary, lose, and then decide you're an independent.
Right, he can't do what Lieberman did, but he can declare early saying that I'm not going to run as a Republican, yet he was asked that question repeatedly, and he keeps saying, I am not going to switch parties. I am a Republican.
Oh, well, he doesn't have to switch parties. He can merely pull a Lieberman and say, I am now an independent. You know me. You know what I believe.
But Specter would have to do it before the primary, unlike Lieberman, who did it after he lost.
That's correct, but he's still got plenty of time to do it, and between now and when he does do it, he has to deny any interest in doing it.
Right.
Hey, speaking of somebody who's got a lot of integrity, how about that big guy back in Chicago, Illinois, who's now on station WLS, the station I grew up listening to in Chicago as a little boy?
The first impeached governor in the history of Illinois is now the first impeached governor becoming a radio talk show host.
And he's pretty good, too, Ken, don't you think?
What does he say?
Well, here's my question. If Rod Blagojevich talks and you can't see his hair, does he make a sound? That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving in cold and rainy Washington, D.C.
Haha. I'm Ken Rudin in sunny Delray Beach, Florida.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
What do Crystal Gayle, Dorothy Hamill, Don King, Lyle Lovett and Gloria Steinem have in common? They are prisoners of their hairdos.
Prisoners of their hairdos.
Prisoners of their hair. If they changed the way they comb their hair, they'd never be recognized